Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast, and in this episode, it's all about family. This is our Fast 9 Saga Cast, a film that begs the question, when are we just going to put capes on these cars? All right, it's time to live our podcast a quarter mile at a time, whatever the hell that means. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm my fellow host, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello, hashtag family.
Troy Heinrichs.
I'm back from the dead, hashtag family.
We could just family that. Are we already sick of family at this point?
You're never too sick of family. It just depends on how much food there is and how much beverages there are to drink through it.
By the way, I should preface before we even start. This is a, I just like calling it a saga cast. It just makes me laugh because they keep calling it a saga. But this is a spoiler cast. So we are going to talk about the spoilers that happen in the movie. If you're really worried about spoilers in the Fast and Furious franchise, I don't know how you sit with it, but I'm telling you, there's insanity and space. So these things are going to happen. Hold on tight.
Also, if you're listening to this while you're not driving, this is officially a drinking episode. Anytime you hear family, you should probably just take a shot.
As long as you're not driving or driving anytime in the near future. Yes.
Well, then we're right? Drunk already because there was like four at the top of the show and I'm exactly. Already hammered.
People are already tired of it. Like, this is so played out. Stop it. All right, well, this is 100% Fast and Furious focused and the first action blockbuster where people showed up in over a year. What was your audience like?
My audience was packed, to be quite honest, and I was a little bit taken aback by that because when I booked my tickets, I saw the little X's on the thing and I didn't even notice that the no signs weren't on the digital ticketing. So when I sat down in my seat, I was like, oh, we're doing that now where someone's going to sit next to me. That's a little weird. And of course I sat next to someone who was probably, I don't know, 10, 12 years old. And I was like, great, this is awesome. They're going to be on their phone the whole time. They weren't even alive when the first movie was out, but thankfully she actually laughed. She laughed through the whole thing and she thoroughly enjoyed herself. So
did you throw in a, you don't deserve to be here, child. Did you throw one of those out there? No, like a real,
but the person I came with, she checked her phone twice during the movie. And I was like, come on, like seriously.
That's when you get rid of that person. You say you're no longer allowed to go to movies with me.
I'm going to go with the 12-year-old next to me from now on. Come on.
Exactly.
She's at least respectful.
Insane. But they enjoyed it. The crowd was into it. They had a lot of fun with it, etc.
Yeah, most people laughed at the exact same spots. You heard a couple people like, oh my God, that's awesome. But you had other people there that were like, that is freaking ridiculous.
Did they laugh every time somebody said Toretto? Because we did in our audience, for sure. Because they're a Toretto. What? He's not Superman.
You don't
what
deserve the Toretto name.
It's so ridiculous. I'm like, basically, if you really ask people around LA, they're like, oh, Torettos. Yeah, they're criminals. They used to steal DVD players in the area. Then they then they turned into master criminals across the world. Now they're super spies or something. Yeah, that's what I heard. That's the Torettos.
Yeah, but theater-wise, the concession line was like super long. So thank God for A-List and all the premier membership access to get your snacks pretty quickly. And I think it was probably instead of 10% filled in the pandemic times, this was only 10% empty.
Wow.
It was pretty packed.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Amanda, how about you?
Well, I had my best friend and my brother and sister-in-law come with, and they were sitting next to each other, and it was just kind of hilarious to watch them live react to it because they hadn't seen the last movie, the 8th one, and so they're trying to like figure things out and sort things out, but at the same time, they're just anybody's reaction to the ludicrous, I'll say, haha, wink, wink, moments in this movie, it just got everybody like, what? What the hell? That was awesome and ridiculous. And we don't even care that it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, man, there was my wife had a wonderful laugh for all the spots that I think were supposed to be awesome. She just like laughed out loud. Like how ridiculous it was. And
yeah,
I had so many things and where I was like, man, should I be laughing at this? Like, should I laugh at this? Because they're obviously, are they in on the joke now? Is this the Ferris Bueller? Are they literally winking at the camera at this point? You know, where did they do it? And everybody seemed to be laughing and enjoying the same moments, even when they were rolling their eyes, which was fascinating to me. I'm like, we just
Yeah.
You either accept these movies or you don't. I've listened to a couple other reviews of this film, and my God, they take this film too seriously. I'm like, I don't know what series you've been watching where you think you need to dissect it that much. Like, relax, go watch something else, because this obviously was not meant for you. And I'm not saying that there aren't dumb things in here. There's a lot of dumb things in here. On the same token, what did you think has been happening for the last few films? I mean, it's getting increasingly more ridiculous.
Well, and to your point, I feel like they're just kind of getting in on the joke, because for so long, the joke was from audiences, you know, one of these days they're just going to go into space. Ha, 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 ha. And that was like the whole thing coming into this, is that they announced that they were officially going into space. And we're just like, hold on, wait a second. What?
That was a joke. We didn't mean for you to take that seriously. And here you are. Ah, by the way, a few years ago, I said ride dinosaurs because they're both Universal movies. So all I want is for them to go to Jurassic Park and ride dinosaurs. So if they're taking this stuff literally, I want that to happen. You already worked Minions in. I want that to happen. Horribly bad.
Yeah, there's two more movies that totally could happen.
Yes. You know, when we're talking about Fast and Furious, let's talk about the series in general. Where are you with the series, like, walking into it? Love it, hate it, like it? And what did you want from this movie, Amanda?
Oh, I love this franchise. I know I don't take it too seriously. I know that it's ridiculous. I know that there's going to be some really stupid moments. But what I love about it is how much fun everyone that I'm with is having watching these movies. And it's so enjoyable to just kick back, relax, watch this, and laugh with your friends. But also, there's always some really cool stunt scenes. I mean, even if they are completely out there, they're still a lot of fun to watch. So I really enjoy the franchise. I did a Black Friday movie marathon with this series a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. And I got to tell you, it was one of the best experiences I've had, because we just had a big group of friends watching them one by one, taking shots every time we heard the word family starting from Fast Five. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. We didn't do it the whole time, but just since Fast Five and then on. And
I still think that could have killed you.
It could have. I think we eventually were like, we got to call it. We ended up shaving. He's a former host of The Hollywood Outsider, Scott Clark. I got to shave his head at the end. So he had a wife beater on and he looked like Dominic Toretto, white guy version. It was really funny.
White guy version. Kind of like John Cena in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With less muscle.
Yeah. They totally look like brothers. What? On what planet? What was dad doing? Because, I mean, none of dad came through to Cena. I can tell you that right now. None of dad. What about you, Trey? Where are you with the series?
I just did a full rewatch myself while I was on vacation a few weeks ago to get ready for this one, to make sure I had everything in play. I skipped 3, and then this jackass had to make me watch it for bed. I'm sorry. All of you wonderful patrons made me watch it for bed movie night.
Yeah. That just released in your Patreon feed. If you're not a supporter, go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. We did our Tokyo Drift and
Tokyo Drift.
Troy's still mad about it.
Oh my gosh, so bad. But at the same time, it's weird because there are movies in this saga, still weird to say that, that are good. I mean, there are some good ones. Like, the first movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
The fifth movie is really, really great. Dare I say that 8 is actually somewhat watchable and believable in a lot of ways. This one, not so much in the believability part of it, but it was still actually a pretty decent story in a way. There's some major plot holes, I think, in how they try to make it work. And I think it's more because Justin Lin was butthurt or something about the third movie. But all in all, it's just crazy. It's fun. And like Aaron said in his Facebook post, like, if you leave your brain in the trunk, it's fine. It is really great entertainment. And that's what we wanted to do in the summer. It's just come, be entertained, have some popcorn, and go home and go, oh my gosh, did you see that thing happen? That was totally crazy. And I loved it.
Like James Bond movies to a big
degree. Totally like James Bond movies.
Maybe not as much with Daniel Craig, because they try to be a little bit more realistic. But man, the Pierce Brosnan era, these are very much like Pierce Brosnan James Bond movies at this point.
Totally.
I love these films since 4. I mean, I love the first movie. And then 2, I couldn't handle like Paul Walker, Brian and Roman, I mean, they said, hey, bruh. I couldn't, it was the bruh movie because they said bruh so many times. And then three was just, you know, whatever the hell that was. So mostly I just love since four, and it's gotten crazier and crazier as each film went on, but I absolutely love them. And then five, obviously everybody knows once they made it like a heist, a real crazy, you know, bring the ultimate crew Ocean's 11 style racing heist movie. It's just gotten more and more fantastical, and I love them, you know, and mostly I just wanted to keep seeing them destroy the world's highways. Think of all the infrastructure bills that had to be put in place because these guys rolled through their town. I love them.
Mostly because Ramsey rolled through the town.
That's true.
Well, that definitely, but go watch all the other films. They all destroy the city roads. Every one of them. They should not be allowed near cars. Like, I don't understand. I mean, they think they're great racers. I'm like, you're not very respectful. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you guys are very, very dangerous for infrastructure. You cause problems.
And
cause
people. Problems. I would say that they're equivalent of what all of us are when we play Grand Theft Auto games.
Well, there's one movie. What was it? Like, Dom just stomped on a parking garage and it collapsed. I'm like, come on, man. I mean, there's cars there. They all lost cars. And here they're becoming a threat to society at some point, because here they had this magnet thing and they're ripping out like things from buildings and stuff, like file cabinets and everything else. I'm like, these should all have blood all over them because there were people in those buildings.
There are people literally in the way and not a single person was harmed in the making of this movie.
Exactly. There should be nothing but innards and heads flying around. Like, was someone decapitated in that building? What happened? But before we get to the movie and some specifics, how do you feel about keeping Brian, Paul Walker's character, still alive in this universe, even though the actor passed away? How do you guys feel about that?
I think it depends. I mean, the reveal of his son in the eighth movie and naming him Brian, I think, is just a nice nod. I mean, that's something that is totally believable from a story script perspective. And then with Mia not being in eight, and then now she shows up in nine, the minute Mia shows up in the movie, you can't not have Mia and not have Brian, because they both left, you know, the lifestyle. Now that she's back in, you have to say, like, well, where's Brian? Why didn't Brian come with you? And so you have to address them in some way, shape, or form, just from a script perspective. And I thought the way they handled it here was totally fine. I had no problem with the car pulling up at the end of the movie. It was fine. I think people are like, oh my God, Brian, blah, blah, blah. This was actually better than doing some crazy Angel Halo effect, or getting a twin brother or something, or trying to digitally recreate him. I think this was perfectly acceptable based on where the story went.
Yeah, I appreciate that they never went the cliche of just killing off his character. He had an abrupt death that was in the middle of filming, if I'm not mistaken. And so they've handled it really great the entire way. And they had this great send-off where essentially he was going to be a family man taking care of his family, his kid and his family, taking care of his kid and his wife. And for Mia to come back, I can see where some people might be like, oh, where's Brian? But I was just talking to one of our listeners, and she's been a guest on this podcast, Christy Flores, and she had brought up how when Mia is talking about where the kids are, she says that they're in good hands, probably referencing Brian. And no, so I think that
exactly referencing it.
Well, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think that's a great way to say, okay, he's still part of this. He's not just like showing up at the very end, because I think that was a great nod too. But basically, he's taking care of the children, protecting them, keeping them safe from, you know, whatever possibilities could happen if someone tried to find their kids. And so they're safe and Mia can go on with them. There's no perfect resolution to this, and it's really sad and unfortunate, but I appreciate that his memory is still kept alive in the series.
Yeah, me too. I was very happy that they keep doing this, and I was extremely happy they brought Mia back, because honestly, and this is, I just felt like it was kind of an insult that she wasn't in the last one. You know, I get that they've got the whole Paul Walker situation, they got to play around it. On the same token, it's not Jordana Brewster's fault either. So find a way to work her in. I respect this, that you brought her back, because she belongs in these movies. She's been a part of them for a long time. And then because Paul Walker passes away, her character has to go away too. And I mean, I just didn't think that was very fair to the actress or the character. So this is nice. It's a nice way to handle that. You know, Brian can be a great babysitter. There you go. He's out of the game. He's going to be a great babysitter. I'm fine with that. All right. Well, remember, you can always find more information at The Hollywood Outsider. You can join our Facebook group, or we're on Twitter at Buy Popcorn. And if you want to support the show, go to Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/The Hollywood Outsider. And we got a little word from Vin on this series, or this film as well, courtesy of Universal Pictures.
We try to take themes in this saga that are important to us and we feel are important to the world, and explore those themes. And that was really the objective, to continue from Fate of the Furious into this next chapter. And in this next chapter, although the overall theme is fatherhood, there are many interesting aspects of this storyline that are going to surprise the audience and unravel more of the identity of the characters that they feel they already know or they feel so familiar with.
Okay, the Fast Saga, F9.
Do you think that this should have been just been called Fast Females?
No, I don't.
Like, no, because there's like the dudes too.
Because it's like the ladies got a lot of play in this movie.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But I feel like the Toretto's are still the most predominant, especially when you're adding in John Cena.
For sure. Sure.
I can't wait till we find the third cousin once removed in the 10th film.
I can't wait till we find out that his dad's still alive.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Pulling people out of burning cars apparently is a thing that can happen.
Oh my God. Just wait.
My favorite.
All right, Amanda, what is this movie about? What is Fast 9 about?
The latest installment finds Dom and his loved ones facing the dilemma of whether that means all family or just the family you've chosen. F9 finds the core family group, Dom, played by Vin Diesel, Letty, played by Michelle Rodriguez, Mia, played by Jordana Brewster, Roman, played by Tyrese Gibson, Tej, played by Ludacris, Ramsey, played by Natalie Emmanuel, and more, back together once again to battle imminent worldwide danger in the form of Dom's estranged younger brother, Jacob, played by John Cena.
Okay. And that doesn't even cover all of it.
No, but do you need to know the rest, really?
No, like,
really, does it matter?
We're assuming you've already seen the movie if you're listening to this, so that's the assumption. So if you need more, I don't know what to tell you. Dom's arc and the backstory. Let's start with the backstory. So what did you guys think about this whole... It's very kind of long, this whole flashback to what happened to their dad, and they're kind of really expanding this whole thing where he beat a guy, I think, to death or almost to death, whichever one, with a wrench. What did you think about this whole story to explain both what happened to dad and also to introduce this brother that's never been mentioned in any film whatsoever?
Personally, for me, I thought that is a great idea. I thought it was interesting to get a little bit of backstory to see the crosses and the hardships and the struggles that why family mattered and how his dad raised him specifically to raise Dom. And then what his relationship was like with his brother, and because of that relationship and the things that came out of it, why he thought family was so important. I think it was a great setup for his character in particular. Now, the actor obviously playing the younger version of Dom, I thought it was pretty funny because like Amanda was saying, when they put Scott Clark into the t-shirt tank top, it was like the minute you saw the open jacket with the tank, he's like, oh, he's the young Dom, before we even told he was young Dom, just because the costume made it look that way. But the
costume,
costume of a Walmart $2 wife beater.
Yeah.
But it works because you totally identify who it is. And I think the only thing that was missing in the backstory was the pit crew chief, like just getting more about that relationship and where he kind of fit into either raising Jacob or being with Jacob or being with Dom after dad passed. I think the crew chief got a little bit shorted in the backstory.
Michael Rooker's buddy. I mean, thought you're going to Michael Rooker. Maybe he'll be more involved in the future films or something. Maybe they are.
Potentially. Maybe he becomes the bad guy.
He'll obviously be redeemable no matter what. So
totally. But yeah, I think the backstory I thought was great. I think they did a really nice job. The flashes came when they were supposed to show up. I thought it tracked very well. I was really, really impressed that Justin went this direction.
I thought it was stupid. I thought it was really stupid. Okay, so let me at least say this. I don't care First of all, I don't care. I am not watching these movies hoping that they're going to tell me a good story and that everything's going to make sense. If they can connect the dots enough that I can still watch it and it's not, it's something that I can chuckle at, but I'm not like, seriously, could you guys really, really, really? There was just, okay, so we know that the father was really important to Dom. I think that part was really great to include, how his father died and why, you know, he was kind of the perfect man. He did everything he could, blah, 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 blah. I loved that. The brother is where I have an issue because, A, John Cena just doesn't look anything like Vin Diesel, and I think it's so stupid. But also, I don't think that Dom is the type of person to go this entire length of time and not even mention it. And you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall any of the movies him saying anything about a brother.
Never. Him nor
Mia. So it just so it seemed like one of those where it just got pulled out of thin air. Okay, whatever. It's fine. Again, I don't really care. But do I think that it works well? Do I think that it's structurally sound in a script? Absolutely not. I think that that is just so far beyond reason for it to just be like, yeah, he had a brother this whole time that nobody mentioned, even though they think he killed their dad. No, man. I think if they would have done something a little different with it, and maybe he just had resent for Dom because Dom was taken care of and maybe the brother wasn't taken care of and he went missing or something. I don't know. I think that maybe would have played a little bit better than he thought his brother killed his dad, you know? So I just kind of laugh at it and then I move on because I don't mind. It's part of the Fast and the Furious franchise to have some strings and some flexibility with your mind into what's possible.
Right. I was kind of on board with the backstory for most of the movie. I'm like, all right, this is interesting. It went on way too long. It was probably like Troy always says, it was 20 minutes too long. There was just too much of the backstory. And then there's a moment, I think it's near the end, obviously, but where Jacob is telling Dom why he didn't tell him, and like, Dad made me promise never to tell you or something like that. And I'm like, well, you just did. So
yeah,
that was a waste of 20 years or whatever it's been. What a ridiculous story. It wasn't Buddy that told him that would have made more sense. Like Buddy finally tells him or something like that. I just got to, you know, and the fact that he told him then, and I'm like, well, then you should have just told him at the time. Could have gotten this all straightened out way back when. Seems like a really wasted plot point right there and a whole lot of family squabbles for nothing.
Yeah, I laughed out loud when that happened. And I think I said out loud, you just told him. Like, because he's like, I promised I wouldn't say anything. I had to promise Dad and I didn't do it. And it's like, okay, but the whole conversation right now is you breaking that promise.
Yeah, you're literally doing it right now.
Ooh, I guess it doesn't mean that much to you, especially because it wasn't in like a high stakes situation. It was just him trying to like put it in his face because he's like, you want to know the truth? I'll tell you the truth. Erg. So,
and, yeah, it just. And I love that he went his own way and he becomes a super spy. Like, apparently it's in the bloodline. It's just, they're all going to be there. Just in the DNA. Jesus. Because, you know, the Toretto's. Can't keep a Toretto
down. It's just funny.
I do, in terms of Dom himself, you know, there's this whole, I don't know, this whole fatherhood, I guess, theme in this movie where they're kind of looking at, you know, he wants to give up this life. He wants to be a good dad. And then they're realizing that that's not who they are. Meanwhile, him and Letty, who really are the parents at this point, put themselves in imminent danger at any given second, regardless, apparently thinking not about that kid at all, little Brian. And it was amazing to me, like, how quickly he was able to drop this kid off at Brian's house. So he must live just down the street from this farm, right? Like, that was just a fascinating. I'm like, you got there really quick and you changed your mind super fast. And apparently Brian's at the ready. He's like, oh, you're just going to drop the kid off. You're going to go save the world. Okay, cool. I'll just be here with all these kids.
I'll just hang out.
Just be here with all these damn kids. Have fun.
Like I said, the females know where their priorities are. The dads are staying at home for a change. It's good.
Right. And then there's
Brian's
moments,
just a stay-at-home dad. Kidding. Now I love that.
I'm not kidding at the beginning when I said that they just should put capes on these cars. These are officially superhero movies now. Like, there's no debating it anymore. There's just no debating it.
It was in the script. Yeah. They were all like, hey, 100%. Do you think there's something weird? Like, I don't even have a scratch on me. Am I invincible?
But they have that moment where they're, you know, where Dom and everybody escapes. And then Dom shuts the door on Letty for no reason. He could have just shut that. Obviously it was locked behind him because she's staying there the whole time watching him fight. So why not just lock it behind yourself, idiot? Anyway, so they have this big fight and he takes on, I don't know, 47 guys roughly. And he basically brings the whole thing down. And of course there's a vat of water at the bottom, but he fell very, very far, right? Like, you guys remember this scene where I'm talking about? Where,
yeah,
you
know, I remember all of it.
Where he died for the 800th time in the series? Yeah.
Exactly. And then Letty, apparently, she just took a swan dive because we couldn't see down at the bottom of that thing. So she just assumed there's water at the bottom. I don't understand how she knew to jump and she would land in water versus plummet
to her
death.
Or she ran down the steps.
The steps were gone. He, like, just collapsed the whole thing.
No. In the building, on the other side where she's at, she just would have kept going and running down the stairs to get to the bottom once she saw it collapse.
That feels like a real stretch. Like, just a...
Either way, it's a real stretch, Aaron. Either she swan dived like 115 feet into a vat of water that she had no idea was there and wouldn't have even gotten to the water. She would have hit some of the concrete going down, or she ran down the steps and somehow managed to get there and bring him out.
Not to mention that she probably hit the water at terminal velocity on her cranium. She breaks the plane exactly. of the water and would have died instantly.
Well, it boggles my mind that the whole story, especially Dom's arc, hinges on he's going to go after Mr. Nobody, right? I guess the whole point is to go after Mr. Nobody and find out what's going on. And then by the end of the movie, they are back to drinking Coronas before they find Mr. Nobody. They still haven't found him. I just want to point that out. By the end of the movie, they still haven't found him, and everybody just goes back to life drinking the Coronas.
I do think that they're
going to... Did they assume that he went down in the plane crash, though? Did they assume that he was dead, or...
I don't think so, because he sent out that signal. They figured it had to come from somewhere. And it just feels like they just said, oh, okay, well, we got this worked out. We got the whole Jacob angle. We'll wait for the next movie to find Mr. Nobody, who's probably still out there.
Well, they went to the crash site and there wasn't anything found. Jacob didn't find anything. So I think that they had assumed he was dead. But my hypothesis is that he just made it look like he died, just like he had done for Han, and he'll show up eventually in either this next one or the one after, because you're not going to waste Kurt Russell like that. You just don't do that, right, Aaron?
No, damn well. Damn well know better. Don't ever.
Well, because the signal wasn't coming from him. The signal was coming from the other half of Ares in the vault.
Right, which he had, which was in the plane.
Right.
So.
Silly. Silly times. All right, so I do want to mention before we go on to Jacob, anybody else raise your hand or raise your voice if you agree The Rock was sorely missed here?
Yes.
Troy's quiet. You didn't miss The Rock at all?
I could give her, the way the story, I can't believe I'm saying story, the way that the script was put together, I don't think it was necessary, to be honest. I thought there was enough
I missed it.
Going on.
Was anybody necessary? Was anything necessary? The Rock, I think you can always find a way to make him fit. The man just comes in and he is a presence you can't not have.
But it's like you had Hobbs and Shaw in between 8 and this one. So now that there's Hobbs and Shaw, it almost seems like it's its own thing. So that's why I didn't have a problem with The Rock not being in this one.
I don't
just
know.
Like I didn't have a problem with Mia not being in the last one.
Shaw pops up and I'm just sitting there going, man, now I really want Hobbs and Shaw 2 instead of this. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where I was at. And here's a little clip from Justin Lin talking about Fast 9.
I wanted to make sure that, you know, what we were leading to, the brother fight between Dom and Jacob, that it was going to be able to do a sibling fight justice, you know? And so... to start off, I didn't want it just to be two brothers looking at each other and fighting. So I just kept pushing and pushing, seeing what we can do. And the fight actually doesn't start as a fight. It starts as a chase. And so the chase, I was hoping, you know, that the idea was to make it so that the audience can really kind of feel this kind of no holds barred, you know, and it leads to a point where Dom actually jumps from a roof, tackles Jacob into a window, breaks the table, and that's when the fight starts. So by the time it starts, the intensity is already, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 is already at a 25. I think that if we were going to bring and share with the audience, you know, the past, the scope of it, the emotions and the relationships and the development of our characters, I feel like the best way in was to kind of play with this theme and explore this theme of, the fact that at some point we all had to deal with our past in order to define our future.
Well, okay, Jacob, let's move on to Jacob. So you've got John Cena, he joins the franchise. This big, his hands are huge, by the way, like seriously, they are freakishly huge. And his arms are not much smaller than his hands. He's a big dude. He's a big dude. And I've never been a, wow, John Cena's a great actor kind of guy. I just don't think he is this talented or has as much charismatic ability as The Rock.
But I was going to say, the comparisons are going to flow in about him versus The Rock because of their former wrestling lives and turned actor. But he's not The Rock.
So what do you feel about John Cena? What do you think about the character of Jacob or John Cena coming on board the franchise? In a franchise that already has probably way too many characters.
It does, but I actually liked John Cena for what it's worth. I think that his backstory is ridiculous. But that doesn't detract from him, you know, he is a big burly dude that I feel like this entire franchise has centered around the machismo of men and the strength of women. And so just finding all of these really tough characters to come head to head with another one, you just keep building and building those characters, right? So who, you know, I feel like at some point maybe him and The Rock will fight. That would be cool, but I didn't mind John Cena being here. I thought it was hilarious. There's a moment when he is on top of one of those big military-grade vehicles, and he's on top of it trying to take down that guy who turns after they turn on him. And he does a wrestling move where he, like, spins. He has him, like, pinned down, and he spins around him and gets him into, like, a hold. And I was like, okay, I guess this is probably just for wrestling fans who are like, oh, John Cena wrestling. But I'm like, does anybody really use wrestling moves when you're trying to take somebody down? I don't know. I kind of laughed at it. I thought it was kind of funny, but.
No, you absolutely 100% do. Wrestling is much like taekwondo or jiu-jitsu. It's all about self-defense using the opposing partner's body weight. So I totally bought the wrestling move. I was like, oh, man, that's cool.
Oh,
and
okay.
How does that guy not hit his head on every sign that was going by until the convenience sign that showed up?
And it didn't faze him.
It's like a Roadrunner cartoon at this point.
If that was not more telegraphed, I don't know what was. For me, Cena, I thought, did a pretty decent job. I thought it was entertaining to watch him. I thought his toe-to-toe conversations with Dom were believable. I thought, for the most part, I enjoyed the character. I think the biggest problem I had with his character was, is he working for Otto? Is Otto working for him? Are they both working for Cypher and you don't really know who they're working for? It just seemed like that part of it was a little bit weird to say, you know, how did he become so well off financially to have all the things he did and be the super spy that he said he was? There just wasn't a lot of that backstory. They did the good, this is why they're brothers backstory, but they missed the part of how he became a super spy. So it was kind of hard to believe him when he's all like, this is my place. I've been running my operation out of here for years. It's like, okay, where have you been for 8 years then?
Apparently Mr. Nobody is really invested in these Toretto's. He's just like, I'm going
to
do everything.
That's why I'm starting to think that Mr. Nobody's actually his dad.
Well, we saw his dad now, so it can't be his dad. Maybe it's John Cena's dad, because I do, like, Cypher makes a comment about you look very Nordic, as in maybe you're adopted or something. That was kind of what the comment was. Maybe that's all connected. You're right. Okay, I'm seeing it.
That's cool.
I'm Cena in it.
That's bad.
You've seen it?
I've seen it. I've seen it. I'm going to keep going until it works.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah, so ridiculous. I like John Cena, actually, in this. I thought he was decent. I really dug the action scene where he's zipping around. You know, he's ziplining across the town. I thought that was great. Minus the whole, how did Dom get there and nail him right at the second when he's flying over on his zip line. I'm like, okay, that's ridiculous. But still, I mean, these movies are fully 100% ridiculous. But yeah, I like them in the world, and I was kind of curious to see where they go from here. And I think they didn't go too far against where brothers would almost kill each other. I'm glad they didn't go there, because I don't think Dom would do that, even to family. So, you know, that was good.
Yeah, the double gun move, I thought that was pretty slick.
Which one?
When Cena's pointing the gun at him, and then Vin Diesel grabs the gun, and as he grabs the gun, Cena pulls out a second gun, so they have the gun-to-gun face-off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that was a pretty nice move. I like that one.
It was, except it led to the whole biometrics thing, which was redamn ridiculous. Like, wait, it
certainly was.
You can track him because he's got the what? What are you talking about? Well, this is biometrics. And like, you're just making science up now. You're like, that's not how this shit works.
Oh my God. Can we, since we're talking about the absurdities of some of this stuff, can we talk about how there's a moment where when they're looking at Mr. Nobody's video and they zoom in on the cross and they somehow unpixelate it?
Oh, I hate
to
that.
Clarity. No,
I freaking hate it.
It's like, that's not how this works.
You cannot make a picture clearer. You cannot. Pixels are pixels. You can't make it clearer. Ah!
Well, you can. It's called digital interpolation in order to make it fill in the blanks to make it clear. But
you can. It's not. It doesn't look like a damn picture. It's not picture perfect. It just it basically globs it all together. Yeah. Okay. But you know what? You just have to swallow it. It's these movies. So
it's every movie.
What did you think about Letty and Mia's arc here? Like, they both missed this life. They're obviously tired of being mother hens. They're just like, they just want to leave their kids with Brian and go save the world. What do you think about this? And I'm not laughing at it. I think it's cool. On the same token, I'm like, poor Brian, this poor son of a bitch is just sitting there going, everybody's dropping their kids off. This sucks.
Letty, I totally bought. Yeah, Michelle Rodriguez's character has always been about the streets, about the racing, about the cars. Mia, I have no idea why she was even in the movie, to be quite honest, other than the fact that because it's her brother that they're trying to chase down, it felt like they had to bring her in because it's, you know, family. But if it wasn't for that, like, Mia wouldn't belong in the movie at all. So I don't buy the fact that she missed the lifestyle one bit. Michelle Rodriguez did a fantastic job as always. I completely think that she could have a movie all on her own without Dom, and it would totally carry. I think it was just fantastic that the ladies actually had some stuff to do that wasn't just, you know, standing around looking pretty either. I thought they totally kicked ass in that one sequence when they're all getting chased down and the three of them are all working together when they're trying to find the key, Elle's character. I thought that was really, really fantastic. And I can't wait to see more of what these ladies can do at the end of the day, because I thought it was super fantastic. You could literally do an all-female movie and it would be awesome.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm all about the girl power in this movie. I also think that it's so crazy to think that we're also surprised that these women are going to put behind their children for a moment to go and do some of this stuff, but we don't ever question it for men because of just the way that society has been structured for so many years in terms of traditional norms. But I feel like this movie is trying to show, hey, that's not really the case. Like, there are plenty of women who are like, I love my kids, I love my family, but I'm going to go take care of business where I need to take care of business, whether that's out at work or here. And I feel like that's just what they were trying to show. At the same time, for Mia's character, I didn't feel like it was about her missing the streets or anything. I felt like when she said that she arrived and she's like, I couldn't not be here, like, I have to be here, I felt like it was because it involved so much of her family and that history. And if anyone is going to temper the waters between these brothers and try to keep everyone safe, it's going to be her. You know, having the sister in between the two brothers who's like, no, 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 let's not do this. They don't want to hit their sister. They are going to calm down a little bit with her around and listening to her in some respect. And so I feel like that's really what her intention and role was just not to be missing it, this whole thing.
I loved it. I thought it was great to have Mia. Like I said earlier, like, it bothered me that Mia wasn't part of the story anymore just because she went off and had kids. I'm like, because Brian could watch them. I think it's funny that Brian's got them all the time now. I think it's hilarious because he was into it very hardcore too, but obviously, you know, he can't be there. So, but I'm glad she's there. I think it's important. And Letty, I really kind of liked how they told that story. You know, I feel like too often in movies like this, they kind of paint, because you're, I think, Amanda, you were alluding to it, because you're a woman, you would be more comfortable just being mom. Like, she should just be relegated to this motherly role and not miss what she loved doing most of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I'm like, you know what? I love this kid. Yeah, your little Brian's great, but I miss doing this. You know, I miss being this. Like, I didn't sign up to raise your kid that just showed up in the last movie, you know? So I kind of respected that. I thought that was an interesting way to go because it's honest in a way.
I also, speaking of Letty, I really loved the way they portrayed her as basically the stepmom, mm-hmm. because she never tried to take over the role of mom. She tried to make sure that Brian understood who her mom was and they honored that memory of her. And just how much work goes into the role of being a step-parent is often overlooked. And I think this was a nice glimpse into that as well, because she was taking care of Brian as if it were her own child. And that never stopped. She cared about him. She loves him and all of that. But she also honored who the biological mother is, which I thought was sweet. She could have been really pissed and, you know, bitter and resentful, or, you know, tried to take ownership, if you will. But she respected some of those boundaries.
Yeah, the line she threw up there was that you have to go after her. She's the woman that killed your son's mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not your ex-wife, not your former mm-hmm. lover, like specifically called out that that's the person that was raising your son.
Yeah. And if they bring her back, I'm going to be pissed because she got a bullet to the head. So if you, well, I just missed her brain, I'm going to be pissed. I'm just going to be pissed. Let's move on to Roman, Tej, and Ramsey, who can't drive, let's start with Ramsey. I think that's kind of funny that they actually had a character that couldn't drive. I thought that was interesting in these movies, and she destroyed mm-hmm. half of a city because of it.
Well, and I feel like it makes sense for a lot of people who live in big areas, in metro areas, or, you know, for her, it was in the UK. She didn't need to learn how to drive. So this whole time, they're probably like, oh, you know, she's part of the team. She's so smart at this other stuff. Surely she knows that we're a car racing team, that she'll probably need to drive at some point. And for her, she's probably like, I never thought I would need to drive. You guys are always driving. I'm the one who hangs back and does all of the, you know, digital stuff. And when it came time for it, she was like, this is going to go terrible. And she's like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. Move.
It was good. And it was good to give her something more to do, because the last couple movies, she hasn't really had a whole lot other than clicking a keyboard. That's all she's really had to do. And she's a charming actress. She, you know, we've seen her in Game of Thrones and everything else, so we know she's talented.
Oh,
so let's give
her
some more to do than just sit there and be eye candy, you know,
or roll her eyes at Roman and Tej for their sexist comments.
Exactly. I mean, you know, that gets old after a while. Speaking of Roman and Tej, well, Roman at one point early in the movie, I don't even know why I would think it for even a second, because these movies have no real stakes anymore. I mean, you keep bringing people back from the dead in the most ridiculous fashion. It's kind of hard to really believe there's stakes involved. But I thought for a second, like, Roman's going to die, and he's going to die. He's going to be gunned down, and that's going to be, you know, something driving the story. But instead, they use it as a meta commentary on how much these movies are superhero movies now. What do you guys think about this whole going to that degree, breaking that fourth wall, and just acknowledging to the audience that we are fully aware, we are in on the joke that you've been making for so long?
I thought it was funny. I thought it was I was like, are they really doing this right now? Are they talking to me? This is really interesting. I've read novels that do this, where the author like just chimes in the middle of the book, but never in a movie except for Ferris Bueller, where they're just as blatant about it. And I'm like, are they superheroes? Is Mr. Nobody's operation like something like Captain America, and they've all been like genetically engineered this whole time since birth?
Yeah, the junior Avengers. Is that what they are?
Yeah, exactly. And I was totally buying into it for a minute. I'm like, maybe they are superheroes. Maybe they can't die, because there is no way. He's like getting shot at gun. Like he, just as he explained in the movie, the number of people that were shooting at him and the grenades and everything else that was happening, there is no way he survives. There's no way possible that he doesn't get a stray bullet occasionally. And then just, of course, miss the landmine by, like, you know, inches, and then roll away just in time. And then the car, like, falls on top of him, and he walks away without a scratch, not even dust on his shirt.
He had gunmen directly above him that somehow missed his head. Like, that doesn't happen. I understand, like,
are they
like
troopers?
Right. Like, they're on ground level. they're around you, whatever, and they shoot the vest. Okay, that I can get. But they were, there was like three or four of them directly above his head shooting downward at him. And I'm like, you don't just miss a headshot unless you're the worst gunman in existence. So it was just very crazy. But I don't know. I feel like this one took itself the least seriously. I don't even know if that's the proper sentence for this, but I felt like a lot of the other Fast and the Furious movies knew that they were being really extra, but they didn't go too far into the joke. Like, they were still kind of trying to take it seriously as a movie. This one felt like a real shift, especially with Roman and Tej, who are just so far out there. You know, the things that they're doing, the survival tactics, if you want to call it that, their abilities to not die. And this is where it felt like they are officially in on the joke, and these are no longer to be taken seriously as movies. And I'm still not sure how I feel about that, because up until this point, I've really enjoyed that there was a level of seriousness to them in some way. You know, there was a possibility for some of this stuff. Like, okay, it's ridiculous, but maybe. And here they're like, no, let's just push it to the furthest point possible and then make a joke about it. And I'm still not sure how I sit on that, but it's a very clear direction that Justin Lin made for this film.
Yeah, and let's be very, very clear on what happens. You know, we've all been saying, can't wait till they go to space. Mostly jokingly. I don't know if I ever really wanted them to go to space. I was kind of hoping they would skirt it. Like, I could see when they were on the plane and they launched this little rocket and it knocked the satellite before it actually went to space. But the fact that they literally went to space
in is insane.
Yeah, actually in orbit.
On a car.
To the space station at some point was insane to me. Because if you think about it, really just stop and think about it. Decades of engineering to build a space shuttle. They did it in one day with a Fiero. And I think, I'm sure Sean and Earl and Twinkie were, you know, just innovative engineers. I'm sure they were. And Tej is very, very smart. Apparently, he went from being really smart with cars to being the most advanced computer specialist in the world, him and Ramsey. But to create a space shuttle out of a Fiero is... that's beyond expanding the laws of physics, because there are no physics involved. This is impossible. It's not even implausible. It's impossible. And
gravity doesn't exist.
I don't know how to feel about this. Now, what's funny is I was talking to Troy about this, and Troy, you love this. So explain why you love this.
I mean, at the end of the day, the space creation of the vehicle, I mean, I'm not sold that Sean, Earl, and Twinkie can make this happen and actually put this together, nor fly the actual giant plane that was carrying the car from that perspective. But the Fiero itself, I mean, if you think about what like the original Apollo capsule looked like, there's no reason why a Fiero couldn't be converted into a spaceship. I mean, it had boosters, it had a fuel container. You could totally create the jet propulsion engines that they have for redirection. I mean, to me, the space sequence was actually way more believable than the foot rope bridge sequence when they're trying to get out of the one country in Mexico to the other country.
Oh,
that is freaking ridiculous, because a giant Hummer, after the bridge is completely collapsed, does not keep moving forward in an upward motion. That is like physics there makes no sense. And the physics in space, I can actually buy it. I can't buy that diving suits instead of space suits are used and they look like minions, but
the actual
vehicle construction and the launch mechanism of how they got into space, that is totally believable.
Dear God, man. What?
No.
That's how they tested original space shuttles back in the day, was lifting them up into low orbit and then actually like letting it take off from there to test the engines.
That is true.
That's literally how they do it. So, I mean, it was totally like above board. I mean, whether you can completely airtight seal a Ferrero like you can the Apollo capsule, maybe debatable, but at the same time, it made sense.
And duct tape, like duct tape is the solution to keeping you safe? I don't think so.
It's what you put on a biohazard suit if you're in a situation in a biohazard containment facility.
That's true. Oh my God, you're making logic out of this. I don't like this. You're making me think it's plausible again. Ah!
Now, the fact that the Fiero actually survives going through the satellite to get to the International Space Station without any engines to course correct itself to get there, that's completely ridiculous.
I think he steered, too.
He did. You saw him actually move the wheel. I was like, what are you doing?
He steered.
And you agree that its movement in space, like, it seemed like it was just in space. I don't know. Things operate differently because of the lack of gravity. So it just seems like it didn't, like, that's not how things work.
It's the opposite, because in space, everything operates exactly the same way because there's no gravity. Until you have an opposite reaction to push you some other way, all you do is float.
Like hitting the satellite and you just stay in that same spot where you just hit it? I don't know. That didn't seem realistic to me.
Well, you got to remember, when you're looking at it from a space perspective, everything looks like you're sitting still because the Earth is orbiting and turning below you. But in theory, you're the one that's actually moving. It's all based on perspective of where you're standing.
Troy is actually trying to drop a scientific debate on this insane nonsense.
Because I love it.
I don't know, man. Awesome. I'm buying into it.
Best part of the movie.
You know what? You love that. I'm not taking away from it. It was a moment where I'm just like, this is, you either got to be on board or you got to leave. I really believe that at that moment. I'm like, you're either on board with these films at this point or you should leave, because, you know, jumping the shark, it doesn't even come close to where this is. So you're either on board or you're not. And if you're not, then just shut up about it. You didn't like it. Fine. You know, we don't need to tell us how stupid we are because we do. If you do like it, then enjoy it. You know, just live it up and just laugh that, man, they went to space. Okay. And Troy has there's an argument there, I guess. Because,
I mean, if it had,
And Troy is very, very informed in terms of space travel. And, you know, he loves the space program and he loves, you know, space research and stuff like that. So if he's making the argument, I'm like, okay, well, I mean, you know more about it than I do. So I'll go with that.
I was literally going like, well, if it has a sunroof, technically, you could make an airlock in the sunroof so you could actually dock to the space station.
Shit.
Oh, my God. This is going too far. I don't know, man.
Wow.
I respect that he is a hungry man, that he's like, man, I'm trying to eat. I can relate.
That's funny. All right. Well, I mean, that kind of leads us to the real important question in this film. Have the stunts gone too far? A plane picking up a jumping car, a car literally Indiana Jonesing across a canyon, space, magnet cars. Like, what's too far in this series at this point?
I would have to say the magnet cars were cool. Don't get me wrong. I think the way it was used was a little bit ridiculous, especially the part where the car was in reverse. I think it was Han's car. And then they basically magnetize it to the back of the other car, so it's actually driving backwards. And then they both get out of the car to climb into the vehicle. And as the vehicle's moving left and right, you can actually see the car. It's like they're on water skis where it kind of drifts left and it drifts right. It's still attached, but it's not magnetized to the car. It's actually sliding to the right bumper, sliding to the left bumper as right. It makes the turns. That physics does not work. That was totally unbelievable at that point. It either should have been on, the magnets were so strong, it literally was part of the car and moved in concert with the other vehicle. Or if it would have turned too fast and the magnet would have broke and the car would have been flung based on the principles. The canyon sequence.
Well, hang on. Let's magnets. Yeah. I just want to point out, they built them in record time. Like, apparently in one day, they managed to build a space shuttle and they created magnets in all these cars, but they just understand the technology about like yesterday, and like Home Depot's carrying these things in stock or something. And they become technically experts in how to utilize them as well in record time. What is happening? I don't understand. Everybody's an expert in everything overnight now.
Well, you had Ramsey and you had Tej, and they had the magnets inside of the bunker, which technically was Jacob's bunker. So that's
But they're all using they are flipping those buttons. Like, they've been doing this for 10 years. They are skilled at this magnet thing. That'll probably never come up in any other movie that we see in this series. So do you think that was probably more of a stretch than the space shuttle? I think
it's just polarity, plus and minus. Turn up the plus, turn down the minus.
Damn it. I can't argue with you anymore. I can't do it.
But isn't there something, and I can't get too far into this, but if you're talking about the polarity, isn't it something about how, like, I feel like there's, it didn't attach to every single car. There was something where it was selective. It had selective polarity in terms of attracting certain things.
It attracted lots of things that should have flown through people's bodies, but that didn't happen.
That's the part that I was like, especially the one guy when he's like standing inside the store, right inside the window, and then everything like flies right by him. I'm like, how is nothing hitting this guy? And he's knocking him on his butt.
Yeah, he would have holes through him. He would look like Swiss cheese when you look back at him. Maybe he does. They just didn't show that part.
Now the ejection part of the magnets, that's totally unbelievable. Because once you turn the polarity the other way, it would just fall down right where it was. It wouldn't actually like push outward to repel.
Right.
So that was a little, the repelling part was a little bit of the unbelievable physics, but it was coolish.
As long as it was cool. All right, go to the latching the cable, because that's the one that just bugged me like crazy. Like, how does Dom plan to latch the cable on the underside of your car? Because you can't plan for that. That seems like, let's give it a shot. Maybe we'll get lucky. Like, you can't plan for that.
How does he plan to have the cable in the first place to begin with? Like, oh, just in case I might need to jump a canyon at one point, I should install this tow cable on my car.
Well, it was from the bridge. It was the bridge.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the fact that he actually had a tow cable to catch the rope of the bridge to then be able to hook it under his wheel so that he could actually swing across. I mean, it was like totally unbelievable. But yet I cheered at that scene because I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
I think he lodged. I don't think it was a tow under his car. I think it was he drove over the edge of the bridge and it hooked under his car with the rope bridge cable attached to it. So it wasn't
anything. Is that what it was? Because I thought he turned the wheel, and because when he turned the wheel, he like was like doing some maneuver to like rehook it on underneath or something.
No, I think he was trying to get that piece lodged under his car because he's just so damn skilled that he can plan.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was too.
It was crazy either way.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
It was ridiculous.
I believe the swing more than I believe the giant Hummer trying to drive up the collapsing bridge and then just like magically clearing the cliff. I'm like, that does not work.
You know, honestly, if they're as lucky as they are and they're just trying to make money in a lot of these situations, why don't they just play the lottery? They'd make a lot more money a lot easier.
It's not as cool. It's never been exciting watching somebody win a lottery, but hooking onto a rope ladder and Indiana Jones and his ass across that way, then flipping four or five times and somehow being perfectly fine, that's a lot more fun to watch. And driving through a landmine.
It's possible. You could flip a couple times.
Hey, so let me ask Troy something, since he's an expert on all of these stunts. He's apparently is.
apparently, so, he's been studying the science of this ridiculous movie for a while.
Since it was announced. Okay, so talk to me about these landmines, because when he was stuck above the top, when Tyrese Gibson's character was stuck in his vehicle and the stuff started to crumble down onto that landmine, it was like right around it, but not right on top of that sensor. Isn't some of the stuff falling down, wouldn't that be sensitive enough? Because you don't have to hit it right on top of it. It's just if something lands in that closest vicinity, then doesn't it any shift of that create it to go?
Typically with a landmine, there's a pressure plate. So when the pressure plate is up, it's armed. And so you have to have enough pressure to be able to pressure plate to push it down to hit the trigger point.
So the area like dust, around maybe maybe a pebble or something,
probably
isn't.
Not enough pressure to trigger it.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so they were planning on how fast can we go? That was what Dom was asking. How fast do I need to be to basically clear it before it blows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Because there's a pressure plate, there's a click, there's the ignition. I mean, it's milliseconds. Right. But at the same time, if you're going fast enough, you'd be at least clear enough that it'll explode, but it'll just push you forward because you'll get some of the dirt movement rather than the actual explosive itself. The back of your car is going to be messed up, but it's rear axle problems.
Okay, guys. Well, I'm just letting you know, apparently, according to Troy, this is all science. This is all.
I was going to say, here's your science lesson for the summer from Troy Heinrichs on The Hollywood Outsider.
That's funny.
It's believable enough that it does work for a movie to make it passable. It's not completely ridiculous like Sharknado.
I don't know. That rope bridge thing is not.
The rope bridge thing is not.
Driving up the bridge, like you said, in a Hummer. This does not work. This does not work. That is not how gravity or science or anything else works. None of this is how it works. That's not how it works. Yeah,
most of it I believed except for that one. That was the one where I was like, oh, you had me so like hooked in.
And here we've got Han himself talking about what it feels like to be back in the franchise.
You know, it tells you the power of the audience because, you know, after, you know, Han was no longer the franchise, you know, there's this fervor, there was this need. And I think people really missed that character. And then, you know, when we went to, you know, Fast 8, you know, that brought up a lot of questions from the fans. You know, why is Shaw now part of the family when, you know, he was responsible for the death of Han? So, you know, these are the things I think as an actor, as a fan, you know, it's pretty exciting to see that, you know, this is truly like the people's movie. You know, they, you know, in a way demanded for this character to come back. And thus I'm sitting here again, being able to play Han again. I hadn't seen Bow Wow or Lucas since actually Tokyo Drift. Jason Tobin, who plays Earl, was in Better Luck Tomorrow, and, you know, we're old friends, and he actually ended up moving to Hong Kong, so, you know, I haven't seen him in a few years either. But, you know, how special is that? It's like, it made me realize that day when I saw them on set that, you know, this world, that this Fast and Furious world is huge. It's expanding, and there are characters from, you know, the previous films that we can bring back that offer something unique to the whole group. And I know the fans are going to be excited to see them because it's you know, it's just what a great introduction and a great reunion again. So I hope they bring back more characters. I think that's what the fans want.
How about Han? Han's return. You know what's funny is because Troy and I literally just watched this. So I think we can speak to exactly how things look in a second. But Amanda, how did this work for you? Because I know you barely remember Tokyo Drift, if at all. So were you okay with Han's return, or did you have a problem with it?
Well, that's not true. I rewatched all of them, including Tokyo Drift, a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, I just mean that not recently is what I meant.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess it works. And I think for a lot of people, it's so far in their rear view mirror that they're not going to think too much about it in his return. It was nice to have him back. And I liked that they did a thorough explanation of all of the important scenes with Han of how he managed to escape those and how they were faked. So do I believe it? No. But did they at least try to make the attempt? Sure. But like everything in this movie, I don't really buy any of it. Even Troy's science explanation, I still don't buy a lot of this stuff. My brain is just like, no, that just doesn't seem plausible. So I guess it sounds like from the two of you that you do not see this as thoroughly explained.
No. And if you go back and watch Furious 7, I think it was, seven was where they re-showed Han's death. They obviously reshot that. They totally reshot that because the car is not surrounded as much. But in Tokyo Drift, that car is completely surrounded. You see Han, you watch the car blow up.
Yeah.
There's no Mr. Nobody magic where he gets out of there and nobody sees him escaping the car. It's just freaking impossible. Unless he planted people all on the backside of that car, maybe. But give me a break. All I was hoping for is just say it did blow up and he didn't die, though. They rehabbed him with scar tissues and he got like some kind of skin graft or something. I could have bought that so much better. This was dumb. In a movie that has people going to space, sorry, Troy, and that's redamdiculous and swinging across a rope bridge and all this other shit, this is the dumbest thing. I was like, no, stop it. Stop it. And that's how I felt whenever they were saying, I'm like, just skip through this part. I can't watch the scene because it's just making me mad how dumb this is. That's how I felt.
Yeah. The problem with it was that they didn't explain it enough in the story.
Enough is like 15 minutes of bullshit. What are you talking about?
I can buy that maybe there was a Han lookalike that actually got in the car and did the drive, and it wasn't actually Han in the car the entire time.
Oh, it was his twin brother.
The problem is that, yeah, twin brother, whatever. I mean, I could have bought anything, but they never showed that handoff. They just showed Han eating peanuts, standing next to Mr. Nobody, to say, oh, he wasn't in the car when it exploded. Okay, fine. But who the hell was in the car? And who the hell was Sean talking to before he got in the car? Like, that's the part. I could, like, show me that part of it, and I would buy the story. But because you didn't show me that part of it, I can't buy that he's alive.
No, they say they got him out before it blew. That's what they were saying. We got it out before.
There's no evidence of that in the third movie.
Nope.
No. Zero. Yeah. Because he's well, and it's not even that he's completely, not even just that he's completely surrounded, but there's like open space around it. So you would have, it's not like people were crowding around it. There was like a ring of openness around his car because everyone was watching. And you see him in the car upside down while the stuff is leaking before it starts to explode. And then you see it explode, but everybody's watching that entire time. So,
and it's cramped, and the whole cage is like crushed, and there's no space for him to squeeze out. Like dies.
So I guess
if
it was like a Han lookalike,
that is the only way it works. It's a Han lookalike, or they put an android in the seat, and they were driving it with a remote control.
An android. And they knew Deckard Shaw was going to hit him right there. I mean, give me a break. It's just ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous. And that's saying something in this kind of movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it is a hard pill to swallow. I can't believe this was the hardest pill I've had to swallow in this entire franchise, where I'm like, this one's a struggle for me.
And it was strictly only the purpose of him coming back was because he was the one that was protecting the key. And I'm just like, really? Like, he has to protect the key? You couldn't have Sean protect the key or Twinkie protect the key? It could have been any number of people that could have protected the key. You didn't have to bring Han back to be the person that protected the key.
Yep. And I love the character. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not knocking the character. I love Han. I thought he was great.
Yeah, I'm glad he's back.
But on the same token, I wish he would have gotten a better return, because that just made no sense at all. And I'm saying that fully observant of the fact that these films very rarely make any sense.
It was just a full retcon is what it was.
100%. Yeah, there's no getting around it. I mean, you can try to write yourself out of it all you want, but the writing just does not cover that big of a hole.
I mean, it was a retcon enough that they moved when the actual Tokyo Drift happened in the timeline.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Now you're going to bring him back from the dead on top of it? It's like, come on. That's why I said, I think Justin Lin was just butthurt that movie wasn't as good. So would you say this is Justin Lin's J.J. Abrams Star Wars moment? Like, I made this third movie, and this is what the story was going to be. So then I came back and I fixed it.
Oh, you mean in terms of Han itself?
Yeah.
I feel like he realized after the fact that Han was a very popular character. And this is just based on interviews and stuff that I have seen, that he wanted to bring him back for the fans across the world.
Yeah.
That's all it was. Yeah. So any other issues or favorite scenes or moments?
No, I was thoroughly entertained the entire time. I think we covered off on most of them. I totally called the drone at the end. Like, she was never in that plane to begin with.
I didn't. That actually got me. That actually got
me. Oh, wow.
It got me too. I didn't get that either.
Yep. It was a great twist, though. I love the twist, because as soon as I'm like, oh, that was okay. That was clever. I liked that a lot. That was great.
Yeah. I figured someone that's a computer hacker scientist, one step ahead, especially with the whole, what was it? Communication theory line that she gives Dom in the eighth movie about the only actions you can control are your own.
Mm-hmm.
And so like she took the reins and said, I'm going to control the actions and I'm going to be in the fight without having to be in the fight. And I thought that was brilliant.
And, you know, Otto is dead, right? Otto's dead. If I remember right. He's dead, I think.
I thought he was. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he was a worthless character. I didn't like him anyway. You know, the financer of everything.
He was annoying as... I'll get out.
Yeah, he was. Sucked. Yeah, I he couldn't sucked. Stand him.
But Cypher, I really like that, even though her haircut's ridiculous. I like Cypher.
Charlize and I like Theron that we still is the only person who can pull this off.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Charlize I liked Theron. Her hair better in this one than the dreadlocks from the other
God,
one.
Oh, God, it's so bad. Like, who let this happen? Somebody stop it. Charlize deserves better.
Maybe they're just doing it on purpose. Like, look, everybody thinks you're going to look gorgeous with no matter what your hair looks like. Let's try everything that goes against your beauty and we'll see if we can pull it off. And she keeps doing it. She keeps nailing it.
She's so pretty. It's so stupid.
But I literally just put a bowl on her head, just cut around it. So I really like that they still at least have one character that is bad, that isn't fully redeemable and everything else. Like, she is kind of evil in this world and obviously going to be important in the future. So I really dig that.
Yeah, I like Charlize Theron, and I like seeing her be the bad girl. And I like that the villain is, you get two sides of the coin here. You're getting some really strong women, both who are really family oriented, but also badasses. And also on the other side, ones that are just downright evil and just very selfish. And it's all about her own interests.
I also have a big issue with the fact that they just made Tokyo Drift the most important movie in the entire saga. Because you have Sean Earl and Twinkie in this movie and they build the freaking spaceship. Plus you have them showing up at Dom's house getting rebuilt at the end, and they're sitting at the family table having grace with all of them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, is Hillbilly and Earl and Twinkie going to be in these movies going forward? Because that is not something I asked for.
I did not sign up for that when I bought my ticket to this movie.
I kind of like how they made Sean comedic relief, though, because, you know, he was so lambasted in the third movie for his accent and everything else. And I kind of respect the actor because he's like, I'm not going to lose it. That's who I am. I just don't find him to be a very captivating actor. He's fine, I guess, in most things, just not Tokyo Drift. But in the same token, I kind of like they made him kind of ridiculous in this one. And it was fun.
It kind of works.
I thought he was really fun in this movie. I thought, yeah, I like Sean in this the character in this movie, Lucas Black's character. And I did love somebody actually acknowledging, you actually went by the name Twinkie at one point. You know, I just thought that joke was spot on.
That was hilarious. Yeah.
That was spot on. There's one thing. Like, when this movie was over, this is the thing I thought about the most. And I have to point this out because I was laughing so hard just thinking back about it. Everybody in this movie has earpieces at all times. They're constantly talking to each other through earpieces. At one point, Ramsay's talking to them in space through an earpiece. And apparently, like, what great technology she has. But every time you see Dom talking to him, it's through a walkie-talkie. And all I can picture is Vin Diesel showing up going, hey, I need a sparring partner. I need somebody to show my emotion to. I need to let the audiences know I'm serious. So he's like, he's always yelling at this walkie-talkie. And I'm like, is that even on the same frequency as the earpiece? I don't understand what's going on.
Who else is listening in on your deep master plans of this big heist?
And I'm just, I would love in some future movie when he's doing that, when they're on their earpiece and just somebody goes, Dom, you got to push the button. You got to push the button, Dom. We don't know what the plan is. You haven't been talking to us for 15 minutes because you didn't push the button. What are we supposed to do? That's what I would love to see.
That's so true.
It bugged me. All right. So there's two movies left. So according to Vin Diesel, they have two movies left. There's a final one that they're split into two parts, you know, however they want to do it here. What do you want?
Is that an addition to possibly a Han versus Shaw movie? Because that would be cool to watch.
No, did we didn't even talk about that, did we? I skipped right over that.
No.
I'm sorry. How about that mid-credit scene between the Shaw and Han reunion? I will tell you, you were talking earlier about how it's no big deal, we didn't see The Rock. As soon as I saw Jason Statham beating that guy and they had that great bit about, well, you already got the flash drive? He's like, yeah, I just need to get a workout in. I thought that was the best joke in the whole damn movie.
It was so good.
I loved that whole scene. And then him seeing Han, I thought that was great. How did you guys feel about that? Like, we're going to get that in the future.
Super excited. I mean, I was like, oh my God, is this the next movie or is this like a spinoff movie? Because either way, I'm totally in to watch that. That's what I signed up for. If they're going to bring Han back, at least put the two of these guys together.
Yeah, I would love to see that. Jason Statham punching this punching bag with a person inside of it, just, it took me by surprise. But when it happened, I was like, this is beautiful. I love this. This is not, like, who thinks about doing that? And this man is just stuffed in here. And he just punches it when he walks away just to be cruel. Yeah, I loved that. I thought it was really great. And I hope that means that we're getting him in the next movie rather than just a spinoff.
Yeah.
Sadly, I think, for Aaron and I, the body bag bit has been seen before.
Yeah, it was actually a big part of the Blacklist this past season. So it was kind of funny. I'm like, wow, this is really catching on.
Oh.
But all I kept thinking about when they're having that scene is I'm like, is this like a nod to Captain America? I mean, it really felt like a nod to that post-credit stinger of Captain America where he's beating the shit out of a bag and then Nick Fury walks in. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's good. I didn't know if that
because they're superheroes.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, I didn't know. Is that intentional? Are you guys doing this intentionally? Because that's kind of funny. I mean, I thought it was funny. Okay. So two movies left. What do you want out of the remaining two films, Amanda?
I don't even know. I would say prior to this movie, I was actually hoping that they would maintain some seriousness to the films. But now that we're like just in some level, but they have just jumped. They didn't just jump the shark. They jumped the entire planet. Literally. So I don't even know. Maybe they go to Mars. Maybe there's a villain hiding out on another planet. And so they have to build a whole spaceship to get the whole team out there to like stop someone from blowing up the planet. So it's like maybe then they run into the Guardians of the Galaxy. I have no idea. Oh
my God. That would be freaking hilarious.
All of a sudden the music starts playing.
I want them to actually go to, even though Isla Nublar is nowhere near Tokyo, but they go to like a place that's like Westworld or something that's an island off of Japan so that we can have the actual fight against the Yakuza, since obviously the third movie is the most important in the franchise now. So let's go ahead and actually do the fight against the Yakuza and do it over dinosaurs.
Well, that's what I've been saying that for so long. Like, and you already make the Universal Minions connection here, so it's painfully obvious they need to go back to Jurassic Park and just ride one of these bitches or go back in time. I mean, at this point, they're constantly dicking with science. Just go ahead.
They're superheroes. And since they're already playing off of Marvel, they can do it.
Exactly. Yeah, Universal goes back to the future. Goddamn. They hit 88 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
Bam. They drive right by Marty. Yeah. And dinosaur.
They hit a landmine just enough. And they get blown into a time portal.
Oh my God, that would be hilarious.
Do it. Or at some point, I would love this. I would literally love this. And they seem to be listening to fans' most ridiculous requests. So just have them drive a DeLorean and then get them to 88 miles an hour. Maybe they don't go back in time, but it almost play the joke like they're going to go back in time. I think that would be really, really funny.
That would be really funny. Yeah. Could they have otherwise, like a fight while they're riding the dinosaurs? Like they're
of course
dinosaurs are riding around and they have like swords or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and the T-Rex comes up after Dom and then the Rock just punches the T-Rex in the face shows back up.
They punch dinosaurs in the face.
I would love it. You know, the dinosaurs are trying to fight with their tiny little arms, but they're just beating the shit out of them or hitting them with cars. I don't know. Go ahead. Go crazy.
I do hope, though, for the finale movie, though, they bring it back into some kind of like reality and have like a good blending of like the first movie and the fifth movie where it's a true actual story that you could totally somewhat be believable and just have a really good story behind it. I think that'd be great.
I really, really kind of wish they would lean more back into Fast Five. I mean, the reason why that's everybody's favorite movie is because it did have that perfect combination of being grounded and outrageous at the same time. You know, it wasn't so far over the top, you know, where just, you know, you check believability at the door.
Like this one where you're just like, what country are we in right now? Are we even on Earth?
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, Troy, we're not. We're actually in space for a big, big portion of it. And apparently you can just drift over to the space station. It's right there. What? That's not how this works. I do want to watch them catch Cypher. I want Rock back. I want Mr. Nobody back. And honestly, if you're going to keep bringing back characters, Gal Gadot, if you could find a way to afford her, you know, bring her back. You know, all she did was literally fall on a runway. So she shouldn't be dead anyway. I mean, Han actually exploded and he comes back. So I think Gal Gadot could come back.
I think that's next. I definitely think
they have a good reunion.
That
would be cool. Yeah.
All right, well, we got one more thing, but before that, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group. It's The Hollywood Outsider. It's a closed group, so you got to look for it. We're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is TheHollywoodOutsider.com with a review of Fast 9 is up there as well as other films. And our email is feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Please rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. And starting July 1st, will be eligible for the podcast awards for best in TV and film. So if you would like to go over there, you can find Troy on the Blacklist Expose and at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sink Into This, me on the Blacklist Exposed and Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. But last question, what's one insane stunt you still want to see them do in these films?
I want to see a submarine situation where they're actually like they're old World War II ducks and they can dive and then go under and then take out a nuclear sub or something. I think that would be awesome.
Would it be a car?
It'd be a car, but it'd be a submarine as a, you know, car as a submarine. We went to space. We can definitely go underwater.
Okay. That'd be cool.
I mean, what could they do that they haven't done already? I don't know. Some sort of ridiculous, something with a tightrope. Like maybe the car goes, it has to drive across the tightrope and the wheel gets stuck and it keeps going somehow, or they have to walk across it. I don't know. I really don't know how to think so far beyond driving a vehicle into space and then also having a bridge that's completely collapsed latch onto the car and somehow be able to drive up that bridge at a completely vertical angle. How do you go further?
But see, the tightrope thing is actually believable. Like when the guy in Fast 3, he comes in and he wheels in on the two tires on the concrete. You could totally have the car like wiggle the wire on two wheels between like two skyscrapers or something.
Oh my God. They've already jumped from skyscraper to skyscraper. Tightrope doesn't feel like much of a stretch at this point.
That's true. Yeah.
I want them to thwart a Russian cyber attack by driving through the Kremlin, like not down the streets, just like through the whole thing. I mean, it's like a city if you've ever seen the Kremlin, and just go through and somehow bring all the palaces down. I just think that would be insane, chaotic, and fantastic to watch.
Oh, no. I got it. Here's the next movie. It is a time travel, and
of course
they're it's in Rome, and they literally bust the side of the cathedral open, and that's how the cathedral gets its breakage in the side. And then as they jump, they bump into the Leaning Tower of Pizza, and that's why the Leaning Tower is leaning. And you could totally set up the entire Roman history from a time travel.
Roman history. Roman.
Yeah.
What if they did something like in Egypt with like the pyramids? They went back in time and did something.
Oh, that'd be
with
cool
that.
Too.
Yeah.
I think we're getting a little too happy with going back in time because now they're going to end up hearing this and doing it because they seem to think those are the great ideas, the most outlandish. Guys, we just heard this. And remember, Universal owns Back to the Future. We can do this. We're going to bring Doc back. And we're going to go back. It's going to be like Avengers. It's totally going to be like Avengers Endgame, where they're like, slipstream. Oh, we just ruined it. The world got screwed. And then like 5 years later, hey, we found this guy named Doc. He thinks he can get us back to 6 years ago. We just got to go 88 miles an hour.
Exactly.
By the way, does anyone have access to plutonium?
Or just some garbage from the back of Dom's house?
Exactly. All right. Anything more? On Fast 9. Oh, I should. Score. Final score. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give F9, the Fast Saga? Troy.
$7.50.
Okay. Manda?
$6.
Yeah, I give $6. I mean, everything was fun to watch, but it's still ridiculous.
And that's it's not the with. Best one they've had in the last, you know, 4 or 5 movies, so.
No, it's not. My God, how many, so many damn movies in this franchise. Well, that's it. We're going to head out of here. Just so you know, we will be off July 4th. We will have, I think, a best of or something like that come out next week. But this is our episode for this week. So I hope you guys have a wonderful holiday weekend here in the States or North America. I guess it's just the States because it's 4th of July, right? Really, it just applies to us. You know, in England, it's called You Guys Suck Day. So, but remember, the next time you head to a theater to see Fast 9 or The Forever Purge, I guess that's coming out as well, buy popcorn. So John Cena, come back, you think, for sure?
Probably.
Probably. He drove off into the sunset. He'll be back.
What is the cast budget in this goddamn movie? Like $400 billion at this point?